we're connecting with a new collaborative and multiple medium art gallery down in the West Bottoms. I'm Jabalani LaFault. On today's Central Standard, plug into a conversation with the minds behind Plug Projects. Find out about their fundraising efforts and the local support that helped provide voltage for their vision. We'll talk about some of their goals, including bringing more thought-provoking and challenging artwork to Kansas City and providing resources to help develop local art writing and criticism. That plus visiting artist Carrie Skanga joins us to talk about her exhibition, Breathe. Hear how she transforms gallery space into a bee colony-inspired hive of artistry. That's ahead on Central Standard after this hour's news. City. It was writer, art gallery, and museum curator David Elliott who said contemporary art is only intelligible in terms of its relationship to our life right now. We're about to find out what happens when artists take over the role of curator, especially local artists who share what they believe is the mission of bringing fresh perspectives and conversation to the local contemporary art community. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFault. Our guests today represent the gallery Plug Projects. They are Corey Emig, Amy and Misha Kligman, and Caleb Taylor, the incomparable Caleb Taylor. Welcome to the show, everybody.
Hi.
Thank you. Hey.
So, Amy, tell us about Plug Projects.
Well, so Plug is, it's a curatorial collaboration. Like Jabalani mentioned, there's four of us. And we have this idea that as artists, you know, there are certain things that contribute to the community and contribute to ourselves as individuals that we just think we wanted to start to help bring forward. So we like to talk about critical dialogue. We like to initiate things that start to be conversation in the community. And we are interested in challenging exhibitions and also just things that start to help people move themselves along in their career as artists.
Caleb, this is an artist-run space, so tell us how that sensibility that Amy talks about differs from perhaps another gallery run by curators or art dealers. Or
I think it really sort of separates itself based on the role of the curator versus the role of the artist. The role of the artist has the insight of what it could possibly mean to go through the steps of, say, building a body of work, basing a concept around that work, and also responding to some of the objectives of the studio practice. And so that distinction really, it really sort of separates itself also in the way in which we find artists. So we find artists because we network with other artists. And I think that that's different than how a commercial gallery sometimes finds artists. And to me, that idea with Plug Projects is what really distinguishes us.
Misha Kligman, Art Imitating Life. Amy is your wife and collaborator and curating this project with you. You're involved in that. So you guys are around each other all the time.
Constantly.
How does that work?
It works great. I mean, we are
he looked at her first,
really good
and
friends. So we bounce off ideas off of one another. Plus, Amy's super energetic and I'm low energy, you know? So I need someone like her in my life to get me moving along. So it's always great.
You were born in the former Soviet Union, but have been in the U.S. since about 1995. How does your experience inform your artwork?
My personal artwork? I'm, you know, constantly thinking about it. I think I'm always trying to escape, really, the birthplace, but can never get away. It's a constant battle to sort of reinvent yourself in a new place, but you can never lose yourself. You can never escape yourself. So it's been an interesting both fight and then thought process to consider whether a person is really created, you know, as an identity, where they're born or whether you can adjust that somehow.
And how do you channel that struggle?
Let's see. Well, into the project?
Into the project.
Well, I think it colors my view of art in general, and in the sense that you know, art crosses borders and boundaries, and is a, if you will, a universal thing. And I do believe in that because I've experienced it myself. And I think of the potential of community that art can create. You know, even if you, as an artist, I could go elsewhere in another country and find a group of people just like myself and connect with them immediately without language or, you know, anything else really, just based because I'm an artist.
Corey Emig, the gallery is located in the West Bottoms. How does that play into the sensibility of the gallery itself and the character of this project?
The West Bottoms is really moving forward in Kansas City as an emerging place for artists. You know, there's been a lot of art studios there for years. It's been kind of underground. It's always been a part of the city that, you know for the haunted houses or you know for Kemper Arena. But recently, you know, the Dolphin Gallery moved down there about 3 years ago.
And it's right around the corner from you guys.
Yeah, right around the corner. Genesee Royale opened a couple years ago. And then Bill Brady comes and joins the scene. And so it's becoming a nice contemporary art pocket within the city.
Not a bad place to be on Fridays. If you want to avoid the mainstream traffic of first Fridays and then other Fridays, you can come down to the gallery and walk around the Bottoms. How does the Bottoms work for you, Amy Glickman?
Well, I think in two ways. Partially, we were really excited to be a part of the Bottoms because it is a growing community for artists. So, you know, there are a lot of artist studios there. There are people that have become a part of our immediate community that, you know, just work right across the street and that show up for our critique nights and our exhibitions and things like that. So I think the West Bottoms is a place where we could kind of grow. And I think that was really important to us, to have a space that could grow as we grow and become, you know, kind of a bigger community.
Amy, you've been quoted as saying Kansas City is a great community in which you can actually, quote unquote, do something. Elaborate on that.
Well, I think, we've all kind of lived in different cities and come from different places. And I think every place has its own kind of benefits and challenges. And, you know, Misha and I have lived in Kansas City for 6 years. And coming from our experience, I think what I love about this place is that we're surrounded by people that are creating things and are doing things and feel empowered to do that and feel supported. And I think that Kansas City is absolutely a place where not only is that possible, but you can really thrive and feel and find your way and learn and grow. And I think that Plug is a good example of that. We all kind of jumped into this thinking, oh, you know, this is something we would really love to try. And we were able to look around and find, you know, mentors and find people that gave us great advice and helped us get started. And even down to just the space itself and a car dealership that owns and rents that space that really kind of helped us out in unexpected ways.
Did they give you no money down? Void were prohibited?
Well, they definitely, you know, it was related to the space and not cars. But I just think we never know where that help's going to come from.
Caleb, how did this ragtag group of artists get together? How did this come together? I know I'm going to get four different answers, but
yeah, well,
you first.
You'll get the answer from the guy who was the last to be picked for the group. So
that's why I picked you. You know,
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's perfect. So I think the first time I met Misha and Amy, at least, was they kind of wandered through my studio when I had a studio at Urban Culture Project, which is part of Charlotte Street's programming. And so they as a couple were really good about sort of making contacts with artists. And we'd stop and chat in galleries. And Corey is kind of a really pro networker. And so Corey was around everywhere I went. Every time I turned around, Corey was in the critique group I was in, or she had a studio next to me, or almost to the point where I was like, is this Corey girl going to be around me all the time? And
were you around him all the time, Corey?
Apparently.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stalker.
Yeah. but honestly, I kind of We owe a lot to probably certain programs here in Kansas City. Of course, Charlotte Street's programming and how we've been involved in that, curating shows at their venues, but also how we how we've gone through programs like the Artist Inc. program, and so we're all graduates, or we've been involved in those programs, and so it came together almost on like a way in which we were feeling each other out, we had each done curated shows, and about that time, after a series of conversations, Amy contacted me. Of course, we kind of have gotten together based on our sort of skill sets, what we can do for each other, how we can sort of contribute to this gallery system. And that's really this sort of roles is what sort of shapes us.
And what are your skill sets, Corey?
Well, as Caleb said, I'm...
You follow him around a lot, so...
Follow him around. I do the marketing side of Plug, the promotional side. And, you know, what's great is that we all have these separate roles, but what we all do together is the really creative work. And, like, deciding which artists we're interested in, the curatorial side, how the space is going to look, what types of things we're going to do in the space. So even though we have these kind of professional, maybe more boring jobs, the fun stuff we all get to do.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 on your FM dial, KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Our guests are collaborative artists who are the founders and creative brains behind Plug Projects. They are Corey Emig, Amy and Misha Kligman, and Caleb Taylor. Talk about the role, Amy, of the artist as curator, how Plug Projects fits into that philosophy. Do you pick exhibits by committee?
Yeah, well, our curatorial process is actually kind of interesting. It evolved. You know, we all bring people and ideas for programming to the table, and then we talk about it as a group. So it's all... It's through this really thoughtful process of conversation that we actually come to the shows. Generally speaking, we have, you know, kind of like a Saturday where we'll all show up and we'll, you know, bring in images of artists' work that we're interested in. And then we start to find patterns as a group. So we talk about how those artists relate to each other and relate to things going on in our community and to artists we know here. And how do and that's kind of how we piece things together and find things that we think are relevant.
And Caleb, has there been any arguing about which artist deserves to be there and which artist?
I would say it's a discussion. You know, not
it's
an
a discussion.
Argument. Yeah, it's not like we're throwing things at each other trying to make our points. And so, I mean, I think the discussion is really what separates us in how we either individually carry the discussion or how that discussion contributes to the group. And so. Yeah, of course there's discussions. There has to be. You know, I mean, we have four people that have their own views, and we're trying to create a unified program.
Misha, is it a democracy?
Sure. Sure, it is. But, you know, majority always wins. So if four people disagree on something, if three people like something, then one person always sort of says, yeah, let's just do it.
The one person will acquiesce.
Yeah.
And then silently loathe the rest of you.
For the rest of our lives.
If that one person's right, pretty much. We have the right to, you know, sort of remind them that too.
Right.
Yeah.
The remaining one gets to say, I told you so.
Yeah, exactly.
I told you that Play-Doh and clay thing wouldn't work.
The resin piece of toast.
Right. Yeah. That's a running joke. Tell us about the resin piece of toast. You can't bring that up on air and not go through that.
Artistic names aside, yeah. I think the first exhibition we curated, which was titled Living Arrangements, we were thinking about including an artist who
had a piece titled
– oh, it was a good show. Yeah. I mean, oh, yeah. but we had thought about including an artist who had a piece titled Wonder Bread, and it was a piece of bread dipped in resin, therefore isolated, you know, sort of like
on a pedestal.
Yeah, it's been presented on a pedestal, almost as like, I mean, clearly as a joke, right? Wonder Bread presented on a pedestal. I'll have to say I was against this artist, but I was the one that said no.
No marmalade, no butter.
I'll get over it. I'll get over it. We can include it in the show. When in actuality, that artist turned us down. And I think that's probably the only artist that turned us down up to this point, which it's kind of funny because it was the one in which we were most on the fence about. So we feel good about that as well because the artists we really want have been great to work with.
Did you laugh when he turned you down? Like,
no, I just shook my head.
I'm not going to put my bread in your game.
No, it wasn't a laughing thing. There was definitely an element of like, oh, thank goodness. But also, there was an element of like shame on him because it's going to be good.
Had a conversation with a slice of bread. He's not feeling it.
Yeah. Hopefully he researches us in a couple years and shakes his own head.
What's the aim of Plug Projects artistically? What kind of narrative are you hoping to convey? Corey?
Ooh, that's a big question. I think aesthetically, you know, each of our shows look very different. And so I think we have a goal of presenting a really interdisciplinary set of programming and really approaching it in a lot of different ways. Many times when you go into a gallery, you get one point of view, and each show is kind of confirming that same point of view. And with our space, you could walk in and see one show and come back the next time and see a show that's completely different, made up of completely different artists that have completely different perspectives.
What's the modern art conversation as opposed to what most people consider art? Because we just had the conversation about Wonder Bread mm-hmm. and a bread on pedestal. Some people might consider that art, like the artist himself considers the bread to be wonderful. Yeah. But what do you make a distinction on what constitutes art, or are you trying to make a statement?
I don't think we're probably trying to define what art is. I mean, that's like a serious thing to chew on. And so I think we are working within the veil that that we ourselves have an opinion of what we like as art or what we want to see, what we want to be influenced by. And so that's more the conversation we're having. It's far too great of a thing to start to break down, one, people's interpretations of art. We're willing to have that conversation, but it's like, That's a day and a half worth of just explaining something and then conversing about it.
And one of the ways to clarify that is through critical conversations. And one of the goals of Plug Project is to connect artists with writers. Talk about that, Amy.
Yeah. So, and not just writers. I mean, I think critical conversation in how we've defined it, art writing is a part of that. And it's part of our initiative to kind of generate different kinds of art writing, but also just critical dialogue among peers, because we're all peers. And part of what has become really beneficial to us personally about Plug has been the ongoing dialogue between each other. So we try to encourage that in ways with our, you know, kind of public. So one of the things we do is critique night. We invite the public to come in and talk about individual artists' work that have submitted for critiques. But then the art writing stuff as well, you know, we have a relationship with Temporary Art Review that just started this month. And that's going to be ongoing. And that's an online venue for art writing that we're going to be kind of feeding from Kansas City. And then we're also going to try to start a small print publication called 8.5 by 11. And that's just ramping up. We haven't printed that yet. But, you know, we're hoping that we can make that kind of a quarterly.
This is an actual paper, 8.5 by 11.
Yeah. 8.5 by 11. The name was inspired by the format of just a really simple 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. And the thought is that this is something small and bite-sized that we can do and contribute to the community. And that would be an open source thing that other people can contribute to as well.
It would be very ironic if that was online only.
Yeah, that would kind of be maybe not right.
Speaking of which, Art Practical, the San Francisco-based e-zine, recently came to Kansas City and did a whole issue related to Kansas City's arts community. We had them on our show. If you want to go back for further reference, listeners, you can access that show on kcur.org. But this sparked up a conversation about local and national art and Kansas City's place in the local and national art scene. What types of things have unfolded after that conversation?
So the conversation with Art Practical was really timely. It came at a time when we were in the middle of talking a lot about art writing and really thinking about the role of it in Kansas City. They were a great example, and they were brought here by Charlotte Street kind of deliberately to seed some conversations about different approaches to art writing. And with us, you know, it was great to see how, you know, being in something like Art Practical, which had kind of a national distribution and exposure, how that affected, you know, Plug and how it affected other people in the arts community. So that really did kind of help validate our decision to work with Temporary Art Review, which is a similar kind of nationally distributed online forum. But it also just really enhanced our conversations even about the print publication and, you know, what were some other things that we could be doing as a small group of artists here.
Corey, are people constantly surprised about Kansas City's art scene when they come in from other places?
Definitely. You know, one of our goals with Plug is to bring artists from outside of the Kansas City community to Kansas City to engage with artists here and with the art community here. And everyone that we've brought in has at one point said, you know, oh, this is a great city. I want to move here. Let me know if there's any positions at the Art Institute, or I want to know about opportunities. I love the people that I've met. I've been so inspired. You know, the community here is so tight. It's really amazing to get that perspective.
They say, oh.
Whoa, I never would have thought.
Never would have thought. Speaking of never would have thought, Kansas City, how important is collaboration in your work, goals, or dreams? You can be an artist or anything beyond that. We want to know, how important is collaboration in your work, goals, and dreams? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write in your thoughts, questions, and or concerns into centralstandard@kcur.org. Our Twitter handle is @kcurcst. Definitely want to join the conversation on collaborative arts and collaborative work here in the metro area. Once again, the number is 816-235-2888. How important is collaboration in your work, goals, or dreams? What role, Amy, does Plug Projects play in raising the profile of the Kansas City arts community, not just locally, but nationally and internationally? And we can go around and have people chime in.
Well, I do think it's definitely a component of a bigger picture. So Plug, you know, we talk a lot about collaboration, but I think we see ourselves as partners in doing that job. And, you know, I think that what we do, we try to kind of cross-pollinate. We bring people in from out of town. We take Kansas City artists to other cities and try to promote them there. And I think what that does is it builds a wider network, a national network of artists that might find resources and themes and conversations that, you know, maybe they wouldn't find in just a tiny, well, and not that Kansas City is a tiny community, because it really isn't. But, you know, we all are kind of doing niche things here. As artists, you know, you can kind of get into your little zone and your exactly what you're doing. And, you know, if you look wider, you find that a lot of people in the country are doing some of this stuff, and they might have something to contribute to what you have to say. So, yeah.
Caleb, Kansas City is a great collaborative, creative atmosphere, but there's one sort of chief complaint that the patronage or the commercial aspects are on either coasts or out of the country, and people are forced to leave. What would you say to the town fathers and mothers to keep artists here?
That's kind of tough. I don't know if I would necessarily tell them anything. I would just sort of...
What's the advice?
The advice is to keep looking at what we're doing, because I think we're doing equally comparable things, either in programming or the events around town. The museums are putting on strong shows. So as a community, it's important to think that Kansas City is still maintaining an equivalent standard as anywhere else, and that the coasts are not the location where only good stuff happens. I mean, the Midwest in itself has outstanding things going on. The Midwest involves Kansas City, Chicago, Minneapolis, Austin, and of course, Houston, anything else. And so all of those places have strong programs.
Misha Klickman, your thoughts on Kansas City's place in the national art scene?
Well, Midwest, I think, has some interesting things to offer, specifically the affordability of studio spaces, you know, allows artists of a certain kind to stay. And we, you know, our ambition level is still equal. I think it could be equally matched to that of artists in other cities. But there's something about a kind of a family, community-oriented mindset that sort of prospers here. And I think that's great.
We'll learn a lot more about your newest installation, Breathe, at the gallery in the second half of the program. But, Corey, can you give us a primer on this project, Breathe, so we can look forward to it?
Breathe is our exhibition that's opening on Friday by the artist Carrie Skanga. She's based out of Portland, Maine, and she's coming into the space, and she's totally redone it architecturally. It's completely changed. If you've ever been to a show at Plug, this one will be and look completely different. She's also collaborating with four Kansas City artists of different disciplines, and I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be one of our most interdisciplinary shows.
We're going to talk to her in the second half of the program, so don't give too much away. We want our listeners to stay tuned in. Misha, this came from you recognizing her work and writing a blog about it, right?
Yeah, I think Amy posted a blog entry on her work, but I saw her work on Salina's Art Center's website, and immediately sort of it's stuck with me because she's a printmaker, but she was using her printmaking skills and materials in such an interesting sculptural way. She was transforming paper into sculptural elements and creating huge installations. And her drawings are very interesting and sensitive. Yeah, it really stuck with me, and it's interesting how something sort of germinates in your mind, and 2 or 3 years later, here she is in a very unexpected way having a show, and I get to experience it myself. This is the beauty of Plug, you know?
We'll learn about her in a few moments. Our guests for now are collaborative artists who are the founders and creative minds behind Plug Projects down in the West Bottoms. They are Corey Emig, Amy and Misha Kligman, and Caleb Taylor. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
And we're going to take a quick break. When we return, like I said, we learn more about the upcoming large-scale exhibition. It's called Breathe, the Emergent Colony. It opens this Friday in the Plug Projects gallery space. We'll meet the artists behind the project in a few moments. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Present experience versus memory, the space-time continuum, the speed of thought and light. A new exhibition called Breathe, the Emergent Colony explores all of these themes. The exhibit opens this Friday at the Plug Projects gallery space in the West Bottoms. And joining us now is the creator of that project, Carrie Skanga, visiting from Portland, Maine, also an assistant professor of art at Bowdoin College. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Tell us about Breathe, the Emergent Colony. Where does that name come from? How did you come up with that concept, Carrie?
I'm so glad you asked that, because the name, actually, the title of the exhibition came from a poem that one of my collaborators, Hadara Barnadoff, wrote for the exhibition. Originally, I made a piece very similar to this for a gallery in St. Louis called Breathe. Well, the piece was called Breathe, not the gallery. And it was called that because I wanted to make a piece that was very much about exchange and thinking about an inhale and an exhale, how that can be a really intimate experience, actually, that we take for granted sharing with people in the same room every day.
Yeah, the opening lines from the poem by a very favorite local poet of mine, Hadara Barnadav, reads, "The beehive exhales legions, inhales afternoons, thousands chainsaw agitated hot, the tiny dark openings of nectar in their dark home." Did you try to capture that, or did you know what you were going to do beforehand and submitted source material to the rest of your collaborators and sort of work from there?
It was so crazy, actually. So I originally conceived of this idea like a year and a half ago, and I started working on the piece like that at that time. Then a year later, when Plug Projects invited me to do this show, I asked if I could have collaborators for the piece. I got names from them, and I sent them all a packet of my source material, and then they built from my source material. But the thing that I think is so amazing is that there seemed to be a synergy without us ever having met each other or seen the work or been in the same room.
Hive mind. Totally. This is from Kevin Kelly's essay, Hive Mind, a sort of derivative of that that Hadar Barnardov put together. You say your project carries concern with space, the intimacy of individual experience, and the liminal aspects of memory. What do you mean by the liminal aspects of memory? Well, memory as a doorway, memory as a portal to something else?
Yep. So all of it's as if all of our experiences that we've ever had of spaces are layered one on top of another. And that sounds really abstract, I think, until you go and see the piece. But like this piece, for example, and I think all of my work does this, but this piece in particular does this by channeling like the experience of sunlight, like radiant golden sunlight in a maybe an outdoor space, or maybe it's like a gold-plated cathedral ceiling. Like those are the visual experiences that you might have when you're in there. And they're all coming from my memories of places that I've sort of layered one on top of each other.
You turn to use a lot of bright colors. Is that sort of the impetus for that?
Yeah, I think color elicits this amazing emotional experience in the viewer right off the bat. So to surround someone in a particular color, it's like an amplified version of a color field painting.
Sunshine in a box.
Yeah, except the box is all around you.
Right. You're a mixed media artist, though, with drawing, painting, printmaking as your MO. What makes you take this multifaceted approach?
That was never my intention. I started out working in two dimensions, and it just seemed to want to get bigger and surround me.
That's interesting that you mentioned that, because tell us about the difference between your two-dimensional works and your three-dimensional works. And I'm going to layer this question for you, since you like layers. Is the audience the fourth dimension?
Oh, my gosh. That's a beautiful question. Yes.
Do you need a windbreaker? Did I just blow your mind?
Yeah. How are you seeing inside of here?
Talk about that. Let's go step two, three, and four.
Okay.
So two-dimensional, three-dimensional, and then we'll get to that fourth dimension.
It's a back and forth. It's great. So I often start my idea in two dimensions. Like, it's a fast and direct way to play out an idea. I do say fast and direct, and yet I'm also a printmaker. So I'm going through like a multi-step process to even get to the two-dimensional image. But that ends up being the kernel of the idea. And I'm trying in two dimensions to take abstract ideas, like I was just saying that ethereal thing about liminality. I'm trying to anchor that in something like narrative or material that we can recognize about the world. That's just something I care about in my process. Then I go to three dimensions, and it's because I feel like I want this experience of that two-dimensional thing, that idea I've come up with. I want to have the experience of living it. I imagine that that would be an idea that could change my life, change the world, make some difference in the world. I don't know if it's like social, political, if it's just like a better mood that day, or a changed perspective or greater awareness or whatever it is. That's the three dimensions for me. Then the fourth dimension is communicating it with other people. So like any artist wants to have a show of their work. But lately, I've more and more wanted to seek other artists, not just other artists. Like I've wanted to seek other people's participation in the piece. It seems to make it the most real for me.
How do you translate that into teaching? I was having a discussion with our ceramic abstract expressionist godfather here in Kansas City, Jim Leedy.
Yeah.
And he talks about the difference between and the similarities between teaching and doing the art themselves, teaching as an artist, teaching other artists. How do you reconcile those two different endeavors?
Well, I feel really fortunate to teach at Bowdoin College because the students there are really excited about getting to know their professors as working professionals in the world, artists or researchers or whatever they do. So I think that those relationships are the student-teacher relationship in the classroom is an arena where I can sort of play out the larger issues and concerns I have about the role an artist should have in society or what an artist can do, what difference an artist can make.
Tell us about your process with paper and other tangible, solid materials that you use in your work.
So I like to work with this tracing paper. It's just like the stuff, if you bought something at a store and they ripped it up in tissue paper. That's the stuff I like to work with. Super cheap, delicate, disposable, mundane kind of material. And I'm interested in folding it into architectural forms that overtake a space, mimic real objects that are in our world. And when I do that, I get to see something that's concrete and heavy and material in this, like, super light ethereal form.
How did this start? Did it start with origami? Like, how did it start?
Oh, my gosh. It started over 10 years ago. I wanted to find some paper that I could – well, it was that thing where I'd made some two-dimensional images, and I felt like I just needed to be inside of them. So I got these big rolls of paper. It was the least expensive thing I could find. It happened to be really lightweight tracing paper. And I wrapped my whole inside of my studio in it. And then I just started making images on top of that paper. And I was inside of my image. And ever since then, I've loved this material. I think most of all for its delicacy, because it looks like light and it looks like air and it looks like temporary things. It looks like ideas instead of reality to me.
What is the difference between ideas and reality?
Wow.
You went there.
Yeah.
So I'm going there with you.
In an idea, okay, reality I think of as like this microphone, this chair I'm sitting in, you right there. Like,
I'm not real.
Okay. I think I'm a visual person, so it must be, I think, of reality as everything I can see or something I could touch or rely on physically. And the idea is up for grabs. It's like the ideas are floating all around us, and we can pull any one of them in that we want to use as a veil that covers or coats the situation right now.
Who are your influences artistically?
There's a guy named Wolfgang Leib who I think most directly probably influences the piece that's in the gallery at Plug Projects. He collected bee pollen from plants in the field with a paintbrush. He just like brushed them onto a piece of paper and then distributed them in a square on the floor of a perfectly white gallery space. So they'd be like this vibrating yellow patch of pollen. There are so many people. I think I'm really influenced by the local artists in the cities that I live in.
Because they're close in proximity and collaborative.
Yeah, and I think it happens gradually that you sort of feed off of each other and build something new just by being around other people. But that's what's really special about coming to Kansas City, for example, meeting the artists who are part of Plug Projects and the artists that they've introduced me to here. It's like a neat opportunity for cross-pollination.
Going back to that hive mentality. Right. You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM, KCUR, streaming live on kcur.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. We're talking about a new exhibition called Breathe, the Emergent Colony. Our guest is the creator of that project, a visiting artist from Maine, Carrie Skenga. She's also an assistant professor of art at Bowdoin College and a multidimensional being, we're finding out here on the radio show today. Now, Carrie, you're collaborating with local artist, choreographer Jane Gotch, a composer Simon Fink, one of my favorite local poets, as I mentioned, Hadar Bar Nadav, and a chef, Craig Howard, who, surprise, surprise, we have calling in to Central Standard. Welcome, Craig Howard.
Hey, how's it going?
Tell us about how a chef collaborates with Carrie, and then we'll go backwards. We'll work backwards and talk about that. Well, Craig Howard is gone for now, and he's back. Craig?
Yep, I'm here.
How are you going to collaborate with Carrie? And then we'll go back to the inception point.
Cool. Yeah, she reached out via email and just let me know that she wanted some sort of food experience there, and with the beehive colony, I immediately thought of honey, and talking with her, I tend to make things kind of like clunky and out of wood, and speaking with her, she kind of let me in on the she wanted to feel like an idea when you walked in, so what I decided to do is just, like, be what I'm doing as much in the background, but still add layers of the five senses to just kind of heighten the senses a little bit, hopefully.
Can you give us a primer on what you're cooking up?
Yeah, so I'm doing it as simple as possible. I had a lot of ideas about, like, pulleys and things emerging down from the hives, and then I think simple is the way to go. So basically I'm making hard candy out of honey, so the only food ingredient that I'm using is honey, cooked down and then shaped into little candies. So as you're walking around the hive, you'll have the honey kind of melting in your mouth slowly, and I'm going to do a honey simple syrup kind of off in the background, but it'll just provide kind of a light honey aroma. So just kind of heightens the senses a little bit.
That's Craig Howard with a little bit of sweet talk. He's going to pretty much make his honey confections for Carrie Skenga's installation called Breathe the Emergent Colony. It is a multifaceted, multidisciplinary arrangement going on at Plug Projects down in West Bottoms. The exhibit opens this Friday. Let's work backwards now, Carrie. Tell us about what a chef brings. You have a choreographer, a composer, a poet, and a chef. What does a chef bring to it?
It's like an awakening of all the senses, like Craig was saying. It's like there's sound art, there's visual art, there's movement art, there's a little, like some way that things touch all the senses in a gallery potentially. And I felt like this piece could use something for the olfactory and taste senses. I want it to be a participatory piece for everyone's, like not just other creators, makers in the city here, but also any viewer who would come to the gallery. I want them to transcend viewer and actually become a part of the piece by tasting Craig's candies, smelling the aromas he puts in the air, blowing up a breath box in the gallery. That's like a part of the piece. Taking it in with their eyes.
Now, all these people you met over the phone.
Yeah.
Talk about the process and where it starts, the source material that you give everybody.
Jen. Okay. I gave them some, like, I did some research. First, I made the piece because I'm very intuitive. So I just kind of was responding to, like I said, memories and things, spaces I've experienced. And then I started to do research and ask myself critically, what is this really about, to deepen the ideas. After doing that research, I put that into a package, and I sent that little mystery box of source material to everyone that I invited to be involved. And I asked them to also respond to that source material.
And what did you get back? Tell us about a little bit about what you got back.
Oh, my God, it's so cool. I mean, it's like the very best of what can happen when you put a bunch of brains together that don't know each other at all. So Jane Gotch, the dancer, and Simon Fink, the composer, are actually working on a piece together for the space. And they're going to be performing that on Friday night, the night of the opening. And then Hadara actually took these two essays that I put in the package, and she made poems that I think are called deletions, but I think I might have botched that. There's like a technical term for it in poetry. But she made just the most beautiful poems.
Erasure is the phrase you're looking for. Not deletion.
Deletion
is not
like,
a deletion.
Implies like a computer keyboard instead of a pencil eraser. Yes, she made erasures. And so she like really physically took the source material that I gave her, those essays, and actually like montaged the words from them and transformed them into something new.
She closes with, "The emergent colony leads us to wonder." And that's what you're trying to achieve. Speaking of which, we have a question from one of our listeners, Gus, who says, "What's the point of this piece?"
Mm.
And number two, what do you want to accomplish?
That's a great question. The point of this piece, first of all, to give people this visual, physical experience. And what that experience is really beautiful. So I hope everyone will go check it out in person because it's not really easy to describe in words.
The point is easy to describe, right? The point.
The point. Oh, yeah. So here I go with the point. So in that space, when you're experiencing that experience, I believe that an emotional shift can occur inside of an individual. And I am wondering what will happen if many people are there together participating and all having some kind of emotional shift. And I wouldn't want to imply that I know what it would be for everyone. But if everyone's having an experience, a changing experience, then maybe there's enough of a force there to sort of move a whole community in a direction. So that's why it's called the emergent colony. I was actually reading a little bit about evolution and thinking about how in beehives, the bees all select for the group rather than their individual success or benefit. So how to make some piece of art that would sort of select for the group.
You're not going to get everybody into this space and then they're going to disappear, are you?
That'll be my next piece.
Talk about the aspect of collectivism that you just expounded on. Is that a mainstay in your artistic approach?
It's a tricky one. I think I want, like, it's a new exploration, I would say, for me. Because, like, I don't have, like, a judgment that it's, like, the right way or the wrong way. It's just something I'm exploring. I think it's actually new for me. Now, I did think about it for a second. But I think up until maybe a few years ago, I'd really been interested in expressing myself and, like, these things that I needed in order to, like, heal myself or say something in the world. And I'm really interested now, like, as a mid-30s person, maybe it's like being a mid-30s woman, I think. Like, this is the way I think of it. Like I'm like, there's some nurturing thing that wants to come out of me, and I think that wants to, like, do something in the community that, like, brings something new, some new phase out of the community or heals the community in some way.
We're on with Carrie Skanga. She's an artist and also an assistant professor of art at Baldwin College in Maine. Her project is called Breathe, the Emergent Colony. It's a multifaceted, multimedia, multidisciplinary project involving choreographers, composers, a poet, and a chef who's going to make little candies out of honey. Now, this project is very hard to describe. It's a conceptual project, something that you actually have to be there. The project is billed, though, as an examination of how we socially function and evolve as a society. As an artist and an educator, Carrie, where do you believe we are as a society?
I think we're moving really fast, and I think that's good and also really challenging for the human pace, the natural human pace of things. I think our devices are, like, phones are our new appendages. It's like this new antenna that popped out of our heads really recently, and we're trying to figure out how to evolve in pace with our, like, technology. I think it's really exciting.
What's scary about it? What's the caveat, in other words?
A caveat, okay. I think that a lot of matters of the heart take time. And
now you can just text it out sometimes.
Yeah.
What you feel in the moment, it goes into cyberspace.
And then right away, someone else is reacting to that. And it's just like a game of ping pong.
And that's not necessarily a good thing.
I think it has its pluses too, though. Like, maybe it lacks depth in certain ways, except collectively we're moving. Maybe, like, collectively we are all moving the ball forward. So instead of going in your, like, as an artist, instead of going in your private room and, like, working quietly until something is perfect and then putting it out and ta-da, and, like, the whole world comes and see it, it's more like you do work really hard on something and you put it out there, but it's like more people will see your work, but they'll just see a photograph of your work. So I guess I just took that question to, like, a specific place because it's easier for, it's hard. I hate to try to speak for all of society, but I think my own experience, it's like there are these little clips of fast information that are maybe a little bit superficial. And I know I'm not the first person to say that either. But I think as an artist, what I really want to create is, like, experience with the material of paper is like this it's a physical experience that takes time, like, and you feel yourself surrounded in this room by something visual, and that gives you a sense of your body actually being in the room. So it kind of embodies you.
So you're asking people to be present with the exhibit rather than attend.
Yes. Yep.
Is that what you're doing?
Absolutely. That's really.
You'll cut me a check afterwards. It's cool. What type of conversation do you hope to spark with visitors, speaking to the audience, the patrons, local artists, et cetera, with the run of this exhibit?
I hope that they're like asking how they can jump in and get involved. Like, I hope the first question is like, often I'll go see art. I usually don't know what it's about right off the bat, and I have to ask questions. And I think everybody is like that. It doesn't matter how experienced of an artist or a curator or a critic you are. I hope that this art show, people will ask, what is this about? What's going on in here? And also, like, how can I jump in and get involved in some way?
And the emerging colony being the operative word, a beehive of artistry, how would this idea unfold? How do you hope it unfolds?
I hope that people are inspired to do things during the show that sort of ripple the ideas and experiences of that space beyond the gallery walls.
So if a food fight with the honey candy starts, is that something organic that you're hoping
Bring
for?
It.
Bring it. Bring it indeed. You heard it here on Central Standard. Carrie Skanga wants you to bring it. Speaking of bringing it, her collaborative exhibition, Breathe, which includes the music of Simon Fink, the dancing choreography of Jane Gotch, the poetry of one of my favorite local poets, Hadar Bar Nadav, and the sweet confections of Chef Craig Howard, who we talked to earlier, will open this Friday evening at Plug Projects in a gallery space at 1613 Genesee Street in the West Bottoms in Kansas City. The exhibit runs through November 3rd. Once again, the name of the exhibit is called Breathe, the Emergent Colony at Plug Projects this Friday through November 3rd. Carrie, thanks for coming.
Thank you, Jabali.
Jabali. Tune in tomorrow as we see what's on the menu for the Happy Hour, exploring the latest offerings for mobile tech startups and companies in the Silicon Prairie. Our show is produced by Tamika Weatherspoon. Up to Date is next with Dr. Wes Crenshaw with a discussion on how to make divorce easier on kids. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.